OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV.
Stream the Masters live on Now TV.
I'm a very confident front runner for caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Well, hello. So this day next week, play will be underway at the 2020 US Masters. You are welcome along to Golf Weekly with myself, Joe Molloy. Over in Manchester, he has stopped watching CNN for the first time in 78 hours. It's Fionn Davenport. Hello.
Afternoon, Joe.
Perusing through offers from several golf clubs now in the Dublin area. Nathan Murphy, hello.
Decision time. I'm going to make a video. The decision.
And he's secretly taking cash under the counter at Spawell Driving Range under lockdown. It's Peter Lawrie.
Hello, Joe. I wish.
Oh, dear. How is lockdown for you? I mean, I'm just conscious, obviously, you're at a tuttering halt at the moment.
Yeah, look, decided to do a few kind of renovations that they don't really get an opportunity to do. So we've done some more drainage work and stuff like that. Or should I say, I've done the more drainage work. So a friend of mine is a builder, and he gave me his digger. So I'm a little boy out there in the digger, you know, back to the muck and the rubbish. That's a and it's funny, you know, you think the way people's careers go, they start in, you know, a ditch, and they work their way out of the ditch, and they become successful, and then they live their life, you know, from their lovely part of the world, whatever it may be. I seem to have done things in reverse. I've ended up in the ditch, but that's life.
There's definitely a Sports Illustrated 3,000 word feature piece. If Wright Thompson came over from European Rookie of the Year to digging up
to
shit.
The ditch. Yeah, to the ditch. But there you go. That's life. If I don't do it, we're going to lose lots of golf balls, especially like last year.
Why? Did they just sink?
Yeah, remember I showed you that picture of me in the picking up in the mud?
Yeah.
I had mud everywhere. That's what I'm trying to avoid this year. So.
Right.
Dear, oh dear. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it won't be too long before you're back open again. On this week's show, this is Golf Weekly with thanks to Now TV. You can stream the Masters live on Now TV, obviously next week. So on this week's show, we are giving you the chance to win a 3-month Now TV Sky Sports Pass. Thank you very much. So you'll be able to watch all of next week's Masters from Augusta and everything else besides. Simple question. How many Masters titles has Tiger Woods? So how many times has Tiger Woods won the Masters? You have to tweet your answer to both at Golf Weekly OTB and at Now TV Ireland, at Now TV Ireland. And Nathan's going to pick a winner on Monday, I believe. So
okay,
send in your entries. Now, before we get into the golf, we should just touch on the big story in the world. Jack Nicklaus tried to warn against socialism in the US, Fionn. He has been ignored, really. Although not, I mean, Jesus, been
no, not
for,
ignored.
For a while there, it was looking a bit worrying, a bit close.
69 million Americans decided to heed, or certainly, if not directly heed, Jack Nicklaus. Certainly, they listened to other people who echo what Jack Nicklaus feared most, which is the threat of impending socialism brought to us by Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Do you know what though? Is John King the real winner of all of this? You know, the CNN anchor who puts in like marathon-like sessions, unflappable, clearly doesn't sweat. Whatever the hell is going on, he's doing it right. It was a weird one because a friend of mine who's on the betting exchanges, so and is really into politics. He trusts betting exchanges as the true arbiter of how things are going, and so before counting started on Betfair, I think Biden was like 1-5, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, Trump was 1-5, And then by 9 o'clock, right around the time, or just after, I guess it was 8 o'clock, wasn't it? When Trump made that insane thing about like they're stealing our election, it's a fraud, they need to stop. I'm going to get the Supreme Court, they need to stop counting right now. And the inference was, is that his team, much like the Biden team, is that they knew that despite whatever, that the numbers weren't really swinging his way. And sure enough, on the betting exchanges, by 8:30, already Biden was 4-1 on. So it was a weird 12 hours, all right. Yeah. Speaking of Jack Nicklaus, I don't know if any of you saw the story that went around. The one Trump actually said it is that hospitals are getting more money. So the reason why the U.S. has all these imaginary COVID cases is because hospitals get paid more money for diagnosing or for treating a COVID case than for a non-COVID case. And Jack Nicklaus said as much. He said, and the quote is, "The hospital gets more money with COVID death than they do another death," Nicklaus said. "I'm sure there's been a lot of that." And the implication is, which is why hospitals are lying about the number of COVID cases that they're treating. The story originates with a state senator from Montana or Oregon or somewhere, Republican state senator, this guy Jensen, who said, and what he looked at was, is that in fact, it's not entirely untrue, is that it's to do with Medicare or state insurance in the US, is that they will pay hospitals X amount for COVID patients in excess of what they would ordinarily pay because you might need to use extra treatments, extra drugs, et cetera, et cetera. And because in the US, if you are uninsured but have COVID, you can still go to hospital. There's some kind of multi-billion dollar fund that takes care of the uninsured. And in America, there are 40 million of them. And so there is a payment for hospitals that treat COVID cases of the uninsured. But Jensen, when asked to clarify the remarks, despite making them in the first place, he goes, "Yeah, there's nothing to infer that hospitals are making numbers up. I'm just literally saying this is what's happening." But it's an interesting one is that, so the story came out and then it was interpreted to automatically mean that hospitals were just making up numbers, which apparently there's literally no evidence for whatsoever. So Nicklaus repeated that. However, Politico have a good story about him, is perhaps kind of musing as to why Nicklaus went that extra mile for Trump with that statement that we talked about last week. And it was to do with apparently the fact that in the White House new proposed budget includes funding for a small children's health program that Jack Nicklaus had actively petitioned Donald Trump at a golf course to take care of. And basically, it's the Miami's Nicklaus Children's Hospital, named after him. And so he had lobbied him on the golf course and had talked to Alex Azar, who is the health secretary. And it's basically a mobile hospital. And so, yes, according in the new thing, there's an extra $20 million for this mobile hospital that Nicklaus is so dead set on. So perhaps Politico have put two and two together and said, that the cost of Nicklaus getting the money for the hospital is here's the statement that we want you to put out under your name. So there you go. Mm.
Dirtang 1000 has us here on YouTube where we're live at the moment. He says the election is not decided. How decided is it at the moment? It looked pretty decided the last time I looked.
There was a sense that maybe there was a bit of momentum going with Trump in Arizona because there was a lot of numbers came in. They were very much going on Trump's side, but then the rest that is to come through from that district is probably going to be more Biden. So again, if you're looking at the exchanges, and it's funny, like everyone is, you got to trust the bookies. They know. It turned out actually, and well, Betfair isn't actually a bookie, it's an exchange. So you do think you should have people in the know. But as Fionn says, even though everybody prepared for Biden's rally to come late, still Trump went to short odds on to win in the middle of the night. I've been watching CNN for about 3 hours this morning, and they literally got to the stage where we're just asking each other the same questions. Let's just go to an ad break.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I've just been asking you the same questions for the last 15 minutes. Okay. I just love how it's the most important election in the world. And in Nevada, they're, we'll be back tomorrow, maybe about 9-ish. Probably around 9. We'll let you know then. Yeah, the entire election hinges on this, but we'll be. Yeah, it's
I guess,
be a fallout for golf and this week of all weeks with the Masters on, and it looks as though Augusta has leaned towards Biden. It looks as though Georgia, all the momentum is with Biden.
Yeah.
That part of the country has turned its back on Trump.
I guess the reason why, and the watcher is absolutely right, the election hasn't been fully called, but it's about looking at the pathways to victory. So Trump is on, what, 215 electoral college votes? And with, if you give him, if you, I think, well, it depends. Some services have called Arizona for Biden, some haven't. So he's on either 253 or 264, depending on who you talk to. But Biden's pathway to victory is he can either win Nevada and Arizona and get to the thing, or he wins Pennsylvania and he gets there. Trump's pathway is narrower and narrower and narrower. So, which is why it's all over bar the counting, as it were. And all of the mail-in ballots that Pennsylvania has, they lean heavily towards the Democrats because Trump made a big point of not encouraging mail-in voting. And perhaps even more importantly is that they come from the larger urban areas like Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, which always have a tendency to lean towards Democrats anyway. So even in Pennsylvania, despite the seemingly big lead that Trump had, once they add the mail-in ballots coming from, as I said, the urban areas, it looks likely that Biden is going to do enough to win that as well.
Okay. Well, McDermott says Trump losing in Augusta is kind of poetic. Jack Hennessy is listening live from locked down La Hinch. Nice empty golf course out the window. Perfect conditions. We feel you.
Be lovely.
What'll it all mean for Doom Bake?
I wonder. I mean,
wasn't it hilarious to listen? I don't know whether anybody listened to it. RTE and our and
Peter, get out. Talk. Peter, get out.
No, but listen now. They went down to Doonbeg and started interviewing people down there.
Oh, that's like, right. Yeah.
And then they had Joe Biden's long-lost cousin on the radio as well. Like, come on.
From Mayo, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. Nothing wrong with that, Peter. I couldn't believe the Doonbeg scenario where, okay, fair enough, Trump is a huge employer. The hotel, the golf course, brings in massive revenues. And if you want to stand up and go, you know what, yes, we hope Trump wins because somehow that is going to be beneficial for our local economy, that's fine. But then they got into the real matters around Trump and still they were backing him. Well, in terms of immigration, you know, he's got a point. Got, you know, we strongly back Trump in everything he does.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I saw it on Twitter, didn't someone say because Biden's long lost cousin is from Mayo that Biden will certainly find a way to lose this.
Yeah. That was funny.
Yeah.
I can't believe, Joe, you didn't start the show when you said there's only one place to start. I presume that was off the back of our sting. When we have our famous and our infamous, as it is, Dave McIntyre, Darren Clark moment.
Oh, yeah.
After the great success.
I know.
Of Darren Clark at the weekend.
Okay, well, I was going to start with our part one Augusta preview. But
sorry.
No,
I don't want to interrupt things.
Let's go to the main man. Darren Clark resides in the Bahamas these days. Peter's digging a ditch in Spawell and Clark is hanging out in the Bahamas. Just think about that for a minute.
There you go, lads. That's life, isn't it?
Did you, Peter, did you play with him as an amateur ever? Or you're younger than him?
No. I'm, well, quite a bit younger. But no, never played with him as an amateur. Played with him a few times as a pro, all right. But he's certainly looking like somebody who's living in the Bahamas, all right. Darren has, he did exceptionally well. Come back. Took him probably a little bit longer than he had hoped to win at 52 now, isn't he? I saw him tap it in there on the last to win it. And, he had many, many times worried or was in a position where he could miss those putts over the years. He struggled with the certainly short putts, but fair play to him. Mm-hmm. Look, he's put a good bit of effort into this and I believe now he's going to turn over a new leaf and after his win, and he's going to slim down again.
Yeah.
Darren has had years of fluctuating from, getting really, really thin and then putting back on all the weight. So his wardrobe goes pretty much out the window and then comes back in through another door at some stage. He gives away all his clothes when he's puts on the weight, and then when he comes back in it, he has to buy more new ones. So
just needs to lay off the coconut. coconut is one of the most fattening foods there is, you know, if you're living right. in the Caribbean.
You think he's wandering the beach just chopping a bit of coconut for himself and he's overdoing it?
Who knows? Who knows? He's enjoying. He's enjoying. Did you see, though, on Saturday, shot a 62 that should have really been a 61 because they'd been playing clean in place on Friday and he hit like what a booming drive down the second, went over, picked the ball up, went to clean it, and then goes, ugh.
Oh, no.
Yep. That was yesterday. Not today.
Oh, no.
I played in the K Club. Sorry if we're interrupting, Joe, but I played in the K Club the year that he shot 60. Wasn't it 60 or 61? 60?
I think his reg was
European Open.
60, so that would suggest 60.
60, yeah. And it was the most unbelievable. How anybody could shoot that number on that day, I have no clue. And like, I think he should have shot 59 comfortably. And ended up shooting 60. So that was one of the most spectacular golf rounds that I had ever experienced.
Well, he had spectacular talent. And in the bad weather, he was as good as anybody in particular.
Mm.
So he won, if you didn't catch this, we're talking at the PGA Champions Tour, obviously. This is the Timber Tech Championship, no less, in Florida. And he was against Bernard Langer and Jim Furyk. He held off both of them. This is his first win since the Open in 2011, which is the mad thought. First time he's won since then. And he had a new caddy on the bag, Sandy Armour, who's a brother of former tour player Tommy. Clark said, huge benefit to me. Great player himself. He can see some of the flaws in my swing, which is many. He's helping me address some of those. He's also helping me with my putting. We've been together 3 weeks. He's getting to know me. And that's pretty difficult to do with my tantrums. At 52, I act sometimes as if I'm 12. It's just getting to know your player, when to speak, when to not speak. I would say it bloody is. Rule number one, don't speak.
Yeah. He's obviously led a very privileged life because of his talent. But do you not have the self-awareness when you get to 52 to say, maybe it's just a little bit unacceptable to have those tantrums, to be that much of an asshole? I think obviously it's not. Obviously you can get away with it. So that's just fine. $300,000. That was the thing that stood out for me when I saw it. When you look at the prize funds that are available on the European Tour right now, yeah. $300,000 for a seniors tour event. And I presume there's the market there for it. I just can't understand. Like, who is watching? Why? How are businesses so interested in the Champions Tour? Or is it that the PGA Tour is making so much money that it sort of feeds into the Champions Tour?
They had better figures than the PGA Tour last week.
Wow.
The TV figures.
Because so you have such recognizable names like Clark, Langer, yeah, Fury.
Yeah, in comparison to the one and the other one.
Okay.
Did you see there was a, I'll look for his name now shortly, but it's a lesser known PGA pro who pulled like a hilarious prank on his caddy. He wasn't scheduled to play in an event and then called him on the, and said, oh yeah, no. I've decided at the last minute I'm going to change. So the caddy went, booked flights, booked car, booked everything, rang the pro and said, okay, I booked everything. And he goes, no, I was only kidding. That's where the caddy goes, yeah, no, I quit. And that's not a prank.
Wow.
Yeah.
The most fearful moment of my entire life was last year at the Open with Darren Clark, when I was stood in the little media tent waiting to interview Darren Clark on the Friday. And Darren Clark had started quite well, I think, on the Thursday, and wasn't playing particularly well on the Friday. But obviously, he's at home, and there's a nice little bit of colour around it. So there's three or four journalists waiting just to have a chat to him. He's going to make the weekend. He's playing 18. And did he four-putt 18?
Oh, yes, yes.
To miss the cut by one?
Oh, that's right.
And the four of us are standing there, and the Open media officer is, oh, no, I'm going to ask him to come in anyways. And we're all like, please don't come in. Please don't come in. Do not come in. Somebody is going to get punched in the face here. And thankfully, Darren Clark decided, unsurprisingly, that he was not going to come in.
For the sheer crack, you would have had to ask him, did you want to play at the weekend?
Yeah. Did you want to play? Stupid question. Was that last year, Joe, or the year before, that you and I stood at the range and watched Clark hit like 15 unbelievably poor shots after another?
Up in Donegal, whichever year that was.
Oh, yeah.
And, 17?
18.
Yeah. 18. I must say, I was quite taken by how, I mean, he was obviously pissed off, but how he took it with a certain amount of kind of calm, pissed offness that he, like, he kept turning around to the caddy going, "See that? Did you see that?" But it was like, I mean, he was playing like a, he was playing like a 12 handy, or he's hitting shots like a 12 handicapper.
It's terrific. Yeah.
He could not get the ball flight going the way he wanted.
Yeah. He seems very volatile, Peter, for all that talent. I don't mean as a character, I mean his game is volatile.
Yeah, Darren goes through peaks and troughs in this game. He's an exceptionally good ball striker. He works pretty hard at it. He's more technical than he looks. Right. You know, with the swing that he has, it's very simple, or it looks very simple. But he is far more technically minded than that. So, and I think he just gets a little bit sort of stuck in that. He worked quite well with Pete Cowan there for a while, and got him back to normality. He was kind of a Bob Torrance-esque swing, you know, of what Bob Torrance would have taught in his time. And I think he would have done very well with Bob Torrance coaching him.
Right. Well, I mean, Pete Cowan tells the story of on the eve of the 2011 Open that Clark had zero form, was in horrible mood, that he came out to the range, I think it was the Wednesday, before everyone else. And Cowan himself says if it hadn't been so early and there were other people on the range, he wouldn't have bothered with Clark because he was in that kind of foul humour. And Clark was, you know, cussing and saying, "What's the point? And, you know, shouldn't even be here. I've no chance." And Cowan, I think he didn't change anything technically. He said, he just said, "Look, the weather is going to be terrible. Weather's going to be dreadful. You're about the best bad weather player in the world." So, you know, and pretty soon, an hour later, he's on the range putting on an exhibition for people, having had no form. He's like, "What shot do you want? What'll I do?" And apparently in the practice round, he didn't even put out on the greens. He felt his putting was that bad. So he'd played to the greens and would just pick up his ball, wasn't putting out. And he met with the psychologist, Bob Rotella. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Rotella got him something in his either pre-shot routine or something with his putting. But like, literally, it was the ultimate cram session ahead of a test. It was like extraordinary. But it showed that the talent was there, but it was that locked away from him.
I know he is exceptionally talented. Exceptionally talented. I think if he had Harrington's head and his golf game, he would have been number one in the world.
Yeah.
He's obviously, like, he is very flash off the course. And because of that, there would be a sense that maybe he didn't make the most of his talent, and that the reason for that was that he didn't work hard enough. But from what you're saying, that wasn't actually the issue. Or were there times during that peak where he could have got a bit more out of himself? Because certainly, like, the lads, anytime you'd see him on the range, he's putting the effort in, he's putting the hours in.
No. He was definitely a range. He worked very hard in the range. Very hard, you know, nearly probably too much so. But you're right, he did like flash things, and he bought himself many, many flash things. I remember being in Wentworth one year, and he arrived in a, you know, one of these three-wheel motorbikes with a sidecar to the side of it. They were the rage in whatever, early 2000s.
Pat Kenny owned one of those.
Did he?
I think so, yeah.
Right.
He had like a BMW with the big... Anyway, sorry, go on, yeah, as you were. But
no, this was the big flash one now. Like, it had, you know... Anyway, and then he had his Ferraris and Porsches and whatever else. So he knew, let's put it this way, he knew how to spend money.
It's the frosted tips in the hair. That was the one for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've all done that, but just not when we're 42.
Well, good luck to him. 300 grand in his bank pocket, and he's going to sip some drinks on a beach in Florida, apparently. His visa means he can't play this week. So that's good for him to win, first time since 2011. By the way, we will come back to this point. I want to get on to Augusta. But Thomas Galvin has got us on YouTube, where we're live at the moment. He says, "Hi, lads. No offence to any clubs out there, but the slopes with the new handicaps, the slopes for the Irish courses are way off." He says, "Balcarrick off white tees is harder than Baltrae off championship tees. Portrush has the same slope as Wooden Bridge." He says, "The Swords Open rates way tougher than Corbulis. Not a chance."
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, Swords is far easier than Corbulis. I've played Manning Open at both. You couldn't have Swords ahead of Corbulis. So I need to look into that. I haven't looked at it in that kind of depth. That's interesting. There we go.
Are, by the sounds of it, are links courses somehow being the rating a little bit easier because they're not taking the daily conditions into account?
Well, that would explain Baltre and Corbelis not coming out right here in Thomas's point.
Mm. But they do, I mean, when you look at the criteria by which slope ratings were determined, prevailing conditions are a huge factor. So weather should have been, I don't know. But it is an interesting point. I mean, I agree with you. Like, there's no way you could put Corbelis as easier than Swords. No. Not a chance.
No. Like, I say this having often on a Friday when I've been off work, gone out to Swords and had a thoroughly good day there. But it's a very, very fair challenge by comparison with most courses. You know, it's not difficult if you're playing well.
No.
And Corbelis has that constant added risk that you may kill somebody at any time as the 84 people cross your path.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll look into it. We'll see. I mean, if a bunch of people are onto us and they're noticing discrepancies, we might do a piece on it. But we are in the midst of the Masters. There's a long winter ahead. Let's enjoy the Masters while we have that on the horizon. Houston Open is on this week. And those players who are playing ahead of the Masters include Dustin Johnson, who's back post-COVID. Tony Finau, also back post-COVID. Brooks Koepka, who's been part of the redesign at this course, by the way, but he's playing. And he says he is 100% again. I feel great. I feel better than I did even 3 weeks ago. All my injuries are behind me. I just feel as good as ever. I'm just going to go out and play and I need to get some reps because it's been too long. So that's interesting. Koepka's feeling good. Who else is there? Lee Westwood is playing. Shane Lowry is playing. Graeme McDowell is playing. Adam Scott, who's also had a bit of a break with COVID, is playing this week. So it's actually a tidy field. And they're trying to shape things up in a way that will parallel Augusta in certain ways. So the greens will be 12.5 on the stimp meter, things like that. The likes of Rory Tiger, many others choose not to play week before a major. Peter, pros and cons. If you had a really big event that you were targeting coming up, did you play the week before?
I certainly would like to, yes. You know, especially going into a major, you probably would love to have a bit of momentum going into it rather than starting on Thursday and kind of it's like a stop-start situation. You would like to play the week prior, put in a decent performance, and then, you know, you're peaking for the Masters. Taking that time off, okay, maybe you get to the Masters earlier than most other people, but maybe you're there too early to the Masters and the hype gets to you. But I suppose with no crowds or should I say no patrons in the Masters, it might be a little bit different. But I think, like, I certainly would like to be playing if it was me.
Yeah. Generally, Tiger never has. Rory has gone for different approaches, and even he's gone for different approaches the week of. You know, he'll arrive early, some weeks he'll arrive late, treat it like a normal event. But this week he's taken off. I mean, who knows? There's no right answer, is there? It just depends on a certain week. I was always amazed, though, the way Tiger could pitch up without playing much at all and, you know, just hit the ground running in tournament golf, but each to their own.
I think that has stopped though now, a Tiger, has it not? He's not able to do that anymore.
He's not able to do most things at the moment, fortunately. So we might just do a little, where are we in terms of form? Before we get into, I'm only doing like the top 10 in the betting here. We should mention, Fionn, some news on Phil and how he's going to approach things.
Yeah, he's tried it out a couple of times with varying levels of success, but he's going to take a 47 and a half inch driver, so just a half inch shorter than Bryson's at the limit of 48 inches. And his thinking is he was talking on the Callaway Golf Podcast, and he said that on the 2nd, the 8th, the 14th and 17th he wants a 315 to 320 yard carry, and that's going to give him an advantage. I mean, certainly you can say what you want about Mickelson, but a lack of scientific approach to strategy is not something that he is guilty of. I mean, he won with the 47 and a half inch driver. He won the Champions Tour, the Dominion Classic, then came second last the following week at Zozo with the 47 and a half inch driver. He's going to use it at Houston this week. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. And so the consensus is that the weather forecast is that it's not going to be as cool as November temperatures can get in Georgia. So it's going to be warmer. So you get like kind of spring weather, which kind of fits the normal play in April. But so this was an interesting one that Mickelson was saying. It's a concern. He was talking about the club, the way they mow the grass or the fairway grass toward the tee boxes rather than away from the tee boxes. And so, and the quote is, it's a concern that if it rains, when your ball is landing into the grain the way it is on every fairway, it's going to dig into the ground much more than if it were landing down grain where the ball would skid. And that allows mud to get on your ball, and that could be a big factor if there's any type of rain or dampness this week, particularly if, even allowing for warmer temperatures than normal, it'll still be cooler in the air. The ball isn't going to travel as far. So goes back to Phil Mickelson's earlier point. He wants carry rather than final distance. So they're assessing that once the ball hits the fairway, it's not going to move much more beyond the point of impact. So that's where Mickelson is coming from, which then obviously the it gives, you know, then you're introducing the notions of Bryson, who with these phenomenal carries. So I thought that was quite interesting. And and then he's obviously talking about other things like the lack of fans, and that's going to be a big thing.
I was looking to, so the distance thing is coming up. So like, you know, right back to Raymond Floyd's day, he would say when he would go back and play the course in the autumn/winter, he would use the members' tees to be able to have the same clubs into greens. But interestingly, last 15 years at Augusta, distance in terms of winners, last 15 years winners, distance has ranged from first, Bubba Watson in 12 and 14, first to 165th in distance, Zach Johnson famously. The average driving distance of a winner is 297 yards. So that brings in about 100 players. Now, to what extent the weather changes that, I don't know. And when I say the weather, it, as you said, Fionn, weatherchannel.com showed the temperatures will be mid to high 70s. So kind of like in our language, 25 degrees on certain days, certainly in the 20s. Yeah. The belief was that it was going to be much colder, but that's not actually the case now. So, but it does seem like there's going to be a lot of rain. So it won't be...
There's a tropical storm that they were worried about. Yeah, now, it seems to be coming a bit slower, so we'll miss. But I think the rain will obviously come in advance. So I think they are worried, particularly at the weekend, that it could be quite wet. There was a time, the second you heard of rain in a major, it was, well, Rory just has to turn up here.
So that's where we are. Who knows what all that means when push comes to shove, you know? So
and here also, we are it's so unknown. Like that, that is the other thing, that the having it in November, even the Houston Open, should you play the week before, should you not? There's such a rhythm to the first 4 months of the golf year. We know the big boys are going to turn up week by week in February. They'll all come together three or four times across March and April. And everybody's had good competitive golf. Where I know we've had the Zozo and the CJ Cup and certain players have played them. They haven't felt important. They haven't felt like you could really read into their form. And I think that's why it'll be fascinating to see, is it just another Masters in terms of those who contend? I was reading a piece on Betfair. Dave Tindall, who's one of the best golf tipsters out there, always does this Masters trends because it's the one event that you could do this because obviously same course every year. And the winners of the last 10 years. So 10 of the last 10 have been ranked in the world's top 30. So it's always a quality player. Nine of the last 10 were under 40, Tiger being the obvious exception. 10 of the last 10 had played in at least one Masters. So, well, goes without saying because you have to go back to Fuzzy Zeller in 79 for a debutant to win. 10 of the last 10 have posted a top 40 at Augusta, which, you know, they made the cut, they made the weekend. No defending champions, no world number ones have won in the last 10 years. And 10 of the last 10 have posted a top 10 earlier in the season. So have shown a little bit of form. These are things that in April, you can probably read a little bit more into. I just wonder how relevant they are. Basically, the stats showed that Patrick Cantlay was the most likely to go and win, go and win this year. But I just want, because I would read that every year and you can sort of rule out, it's great for ruling out an awful lot of people. I just wonder, is it going to be very different now? Because people are coming into it in all sorts of different ways.
But is there, I mean, and with all respect to Dave Tindall, who I agree is absolutely brilliant. But like, first of all, Augusta's an invitational. So, you know, and second of all, as we know, it's a course with the difficulty of the greens and you have to know where to hit the shots that it will not favor first-time players. So you need experience. The fact that it's an invitational, they're going to invite the top 50 in the world plus performers. So people who are performing that year are getting an invite. So a lot of those kind of top 10, are any of them that surprising? Really?
Well, I think even if you look at somebody like Danny Willett, you would have assumed was seen as a bit of an outsider. But actually, Danny Willett at that stage was highly ranked and was having a decent season. That people aren't really coming from nowhere.
yeah,
to just turn up. Like, it would rule out a Jordan Spieth,
a Tiger Woods.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because again, well, no, Tiger, I suppose there was that one exception last year, but the players who aren't showing form are unlikely to just suddenly find it at Augusta.
Although I was listening to a other podcast, and one of the things that was being said, they were interviewing an Australian caddy who says that Augusta, more than almost any other course they play, is about muscle memory of shots, is that even allowing for your point that Jordan Spieth can show up, and because he knows where the golf ball has to go, he knows where each shot has to go. Joe Molloy, you're laughing, and I'm
looking.
Is this wishful thinking?
I'm not laughing. I'm looking at Peter's face, and I'm laughing.
Yeah. He's saying, he's just waiting for what I'm going to come back with.
Oh, sorry. Basically, yeah, saying not that Jordan Spieth has improved chances of performing well, but that Jordan Spieth has a better chance in playing as poorly as Jordan Spieth is. He has a better chance at Augusta than he does, say, in any other major, because he knows where the ball has to go. And as a corollary, saying that having played with Tiger Woods like countless times, he was saying that the one outstanding fact of Tiger Woods' game is that even if the shot doesn't come off, he's always playing the right shot for the circumstance. He very, very, very rarely plays a shot that he shouldn't be playing. And that Augusta is the kind of course that invites that level of knowledge.
But that's because...
Do with that what you will.
Okay, but that's because...
I agree with a lot of that, Fiona, I have to say. And so does Jordan Spieth, as we discussed last week. Spieth has made this point. But Peter, I know you're going to make a point of your own.
Well, first of all, there's no such thing as muscle memory. That's the first point. That's bandied around quite a lot. And I'm not... just your muscles have no
science,
idea what
they're science, doing. Science.
Science, exactly.
But hang on, sorry. When we talk about that, right? Say you don't play golf for 3 years and us three hackers don't play golf for 3 years. Somehow, because you have quote unquote muscle memory, i.e. just a gazillion reps done on driving ranges since you were 5 years old, if after those 3 years we all stand up with a 9-iron in our hand and hit our first shot, you somehow will just take to it far more quickly than us and probably hit a very good shot and will, you know, absolutely make a mess of things. There's some kind of residual memory there. Muscle memory may be the wrong term, obviously, but there is something there.
What do you think my good is, you know, from whatever, is my absolute terrible. And you're looking at my terrible and thinking, cheekers, that's not bad comparison to my, you know what I mean, to your own terrible. Yes. So I think that's more the case of it.
But maybe here we're comparing Spieth's terrible away from Augusta to Spieth's terrible at Augusta being not so bad.
Just one thing about going back to the same golf course week in or year in, year out is, you know the golf course, right? You know where to hit it, where not to hit it. And there is a basic familiarity about going back to the same place, same restaurants, et cetera, and you feel comfortable and your brain doesn't get in the way of what you're doing at the start. So for Jordan Spieth to come out of the Masters this year and shoot a good round in the first round or even a good round in the second round will be very acceptable. You know, you would think that's what he's going to do. That's probably what he will do. But then all of a sudden the brain clicks into another gear and thinking, you know, shit, what am I doing here? Like, you know, what has changed? Maybe I'm back. And then all of a sudden Saturday 78, Sunday 72, and he's back down the road. And unfortunately that happens not only to Jordan Spieth, but to many, many other golfers.
Sure.
And
I wouldn't give for Amen Corner Sunday Spieth to be two shots in front. It'd be as nervous as it could be right now watching sport. Because as Peter said, you could not trust them. You just could not trust them. But, oh, ought to be glorious.
Oh, sure. Perhaps, Peter, you're correct. And it's not muscle memory. I misspoke. It's having won there already and having performed repeatedly that he knows how to play that golf course better than most, and that's what he brings with him to that golf course. So, you know, maybe it's not muscle memory, but you know what I'm trying to say.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Interestingly, sorry, go on.
No, what I was going to say was the most important thing that's going to come out of the 2020 Masters is that if Bryson DeChambeau comes along or Phil Mickelson with his 47.5-inch driver and they destroy the golf course with length, I guarantee you that the golf ball changes within 6 months.
Do you think Augusta has that power over the PGA?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think they have that power over golf in general. If the Masters is changed by if a green is driven or Bryson makes a show of the place by hitting wedge into par fives and whatever else, whatever he's carrying at 400 yards, the ball will change.
Can I give you the betting? This is how the bookies figure we're lying. Jordan Spieth's not in the top 10, unfortunately. Nor is Tiger Woods, nor is Phil Mickelson. Bryson DeChambeau is their favorite. And he's 15 to 2. So what's that? 7.5 to 1 is Bryson. John Rahm is second favorite at 11 to 1. Rory McIlroy is joint second favorite at 11 to 1. Justin Thomas then very close behind them, 12 to 1. And Dustin Johnson is also 12 to 1. So it's DeChambeau, Rahm, McIlroy, and then Justin Thomas, DJ. And then the next batch are Xander, he's about 12s. Brooks is at 14s. Patrick Cantlay is at 18s. And then Patrick Reed is kind of 20 to 1 territory. So it's DeChambeau, Rahm, McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, Xander, Brooks, Cantlay, and Patrick Reed. On Cantlay, by the way, Owen McDermott makes the point, he's watching here on YouTube. Cantlay did have the lead last year, remember? Great iron player. Augusta is a second shot golf course. Putting is overrated at Augusta. Bubba, an awful putter, has won twice. Cantlay seemed to shit the bed on 16, basically. He saw the leaderboard and went,
That guy. Now, he does look to be a far better, more comfortable player. He wasn't even back that long, about 18 months ago. Obviously, he's had a huge amount of injuries. So, he won recently. Is in brilliant form. So you can imagine, I think a lot of people are going to find themselves tipping Patrick Cantlay. Yeah. Almost all those players have played well around Augusta as well. Like DeChambeau led after the first round last year. John Rahm's finished in the top 10 the last couple of years. The one thing that is interesting is like there's no talk of Rory. So again, career Grand Slam, all of that jazz that has dogged him in that traditional January to April build-up, as he's asked about it in every press conference. I can't remember Rory, unless I've somehow missed this, talking about this in the last sort of 6 weeks.
He talked recently about how he preferred this build-up. Right. You know, in a classic McIlroy move, he upped the hype on himself by saying, do you know what, I really like the lack of hype. It makes me feel good.
Yes. Can I just throw a little damp water onto the Bryson odds? So our ultimate golf stats man, Justin Ray, of the 58 players in the field who played more than 8 rounds at Augusta, Bryson ranks 58th in strokes gained, putting per round. That is, putting stats have not held up.
Aren't we almost
two different players?
A new player now. Mm-hmm. Bryson DeChambeau is in year one.
You think?
I just think I think any previous stats of his are almost irrelevant. And, geez, he's about the best putter on tour all of a sudden this year. I honestly think he has remade himself. So I'm genuinely not worried what he did 3 years ago.
Yeah, no. Obviously, the bookies know. Now. He has confidence.
Confidence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Woods was interviewed about this and about the lack of fans. And he gave a kind of an interesting observation. It was this, is that... the one component that's going to be so odd for all of us who've played there is having no spectators. On 7, you aim at one spectator and you're going to cut it to another, which will leave you either left of the flag or right of the flag. That's what I've done in the past, but there's going to be no background. Now, even at our kind of crappy, way down the line level of golf, the lack of a fixed point, target point, is off-putting. It's always like, you know, the more you can precisely find a target point and fans, it's interesting to hear Woods talk like that, because you realize that he uses, or and I'm sure Peter, you must have done it a million times, where you use like, well, aim it off the guy there, and you know, is that a?
Especially on hilly golf courses, so a lot of their shots are going uphill or downhill, and especially trying to get your distance control going up the hill is probably the most difficult. So you're trying to aim at one point where you're hitting kind of away from the flag, to bring the ball back onto the flag. It will be more difficult to judge where you're starting the ball, but also judging distance, because all you can see is a hill and a flag on top of it, and nothing else around it.
Woods, by the way, is 25-1. Just if you're wondering where they have him, so they don't have him a million miles off. They have him just behind Patrick Reed. So it's Woods, Bubba Watson, and Colin Morikawa all around 25-1 territory. There's no evidence.
If Bubba could somehow have a good week on the greens, he's playing really well.
Yeah, 100%. We were talking about that last week, and I don't know if you probably didn't catch last week. I know there's a lot going on. Fionn had he brought us a brilliant interview he had done
about where the weight loss,
the anxiety, and
just
everything.
The anxiety. Yeah.
Seems to have gotten top of that now. So who are we picking?
Oh, we're not picking anybody till next week.
No. We're getting rolling. We're going for some anti-post prices here, Peter.
Are we going early next week? Wednesday, maybe?
Oh, Tuesday or Wednesday, I think. And you know what?
It'd have to be.
With the beauty of Zoom, Nathan and I both happened to be in the office last night. We were saying, you know what? Like, it's no hardship to maybe log on the old Zoom some evening midway through and have a little catch up.
A little recap. Yeah, why not? Yeah. I'll be watching every minute of it.
A bottle of wine in the corner, the Coke, whatever else you want.
What do you make of sniffing? Where's Brooks, Joe? Where's Koepka?
He's nowhere to be seen in the top.
He's about 18-1 there. He's just after Schauffele.
Oh, sorry, he's 18. He's with Schauffele. Yeah, 18.
I only mention it because he is saying I am 100% back, fit, no problems.
Yeah,
and
if he goes well this week at Houston, his price drops dramatically. He drops into about 11-1 territory with DJ.
You'd like to see how he plays this week and how the knee holds up and whatever else. How hard is he hitting it at the ball and stuff like that. So.
Can I put it to you then? Right, here we go. I'll get the ball rolling. Let's get down to some brass tacks here. Bryson, massive chance. And like, I can't wait to see where he's hitting the ball. I can't wait to see where he hits it on 18. I can't wait to see where he hits it on 13 and 15 and all these holes. John Rahm, I don't know what's stopping me from picking John Rahm. Maybe someone else shares that sense of I just don't think so.
Maybe it's that.
Yeah. His temperament hasn't stopped him winning big tournaments, so I don't know what that is. McIlroy, I think we have to be honest. McIlroy at 11-1 is not good value given his wedge game.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Peter, agree or disagree?
Agree.
Okay.
And I wouldn't only say wedge game. He needs to hit his irons pin high. So he needs to hit his wedges pin high as well.
Yeah. Justin Thomas, 12s, give him a chance. Give him a big chance. Short game, unbelievable. Xander is one of these players. I'm just not familiar enough with Xander Schauffele's game. I watch him week in, week out, and he just kind of doesn't make an impression on me.
It's just a bit dull.
What's Xander really good at?
Everything.
That's boring.
There's not one thing that he stands out at. Consistency. He's very
consistent.
Oh, okay. We're out of fireworks.
And but he has a good attitude on the golf course too.
That's even worse, for God's sake.
Yeah.
God.
Consistent, good at everything, and a good attitude.
Someone's at the door.
That's my doorbell. I'm going to go answer that for a second.
Yeah.
Just hang fire.
Yeah. Okay. Leave your headphones in just so we can hear.
John Rahm definitely strikes me as the one on the Monday after the Masters. You're going, it was just so obvious. Why did we think about this so much? John Rahm has played unbelievable golf at incredibly tough golf courses consistently, has form at Augusta. Why are we overthinking this?
And where are you on Rahm?
I fear that in 3 years' time, he still won't have won one and it's become this big thing. And I'd love to see him win it. I would absolutely love to see him win it. I think he's got a great chance. I would have him ahead of DeChambeau. Of those four or five you have read out, I would put him in the mix.
So you don't like, you think DeChambeau, it's not going to happen?
it just feels that surely there's too much around Augusta. He'll overthink it. He'll make a mistake. And it feels it's been a few weeks since we've seen him.
Again,
maybe I'm trying to find reasons and should just accept that Bryson is here and he's going to dominate. My anti-post, about 80 to 1. He may not survive the 4 days. He could be leading after 9 on Sunday and decide, not feeling great. Jason Day.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, had a very good US Open.
Playing well. Played really well as the Masters last year. I think he was leading possibly at the halfway stage. Was right there on the Sunday. And I think he could give you a run for your money at the very least at a big enough price. He's sort of become the old forgotten man. And listen, for the heartfelt moment on 18, when Dash, 6'3", walks on to hug his dad.
And can't find him.
That's funny. That's very funny.
Okay, well, that brings us down to DJ, Dustin Johnson, 12-1, post-COVID.
They're nice odds to be playing with.
I think Dustin has a great chance.
You know my opinion of Dustin in the major.
What? He doesn't show up?
Cracks under pressure. This lad can't handle pressure. Can't.
But you have to remember, this is a Masters where there's going to be nobody around.
There was nobody around at the USPGA and he fluffed his lines there on a Sunday. Sorry, the guy, there'll be egg in my face someday because DJ will win another major. There's nothing sure.
Absolutely.
You know, he will win another major. But until then, I'm going to pretend there's absolute certainty he won't. Xander, we've discussed Xander. Brooks Koepka, we'll see how he goes this week. And then the final couple of names, Patrick Cantlay then and Patrick Reed are the other two who are kind of in the top tens. Cantlay's not a very glamorous winner and therefore it's that bit harder to pick. I can't lay to win, you know, it's not the most appetizing result. Patrick Reed would be interesting, I guess.
Mm.
And then we're into Woods, Bubba Watson, Colin Morikawa. So there we are.
Mm.
I think we're going, if we're looking at outsiders, you know, we have to look at my mate, Tony Fenu, and Bubba Watson.
Are you serious?
Finau.
Oh, yeah. Do you want to read out that email?
It was, in fairness, you got off quite lightly, Peter. It was Moore, myself, and Joe who got the stick for once.
What was that?
Well, let's just say we've a lot to think about with regard our broadcasting talents and just the way we speak.
It's just the way you pronounce TH.
Thomas. Pronounce him Justin Thomas rather than Justin. What? Wait, now I'm confused.
I meant to say Justin Thomas, but you say Thomas, like Thomas. As if you pronounce the you pronounce the TH.
I spent so long trying to say me TH is right that now I just can't do anything else.
Yeah.
So
I think I go with Thomas. I can't remember that.
Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
Am I not saying Thomas there? Am I saying TH? Thomas.
Not there, no, not really.
Justin Thomas.
It was a very polite email, if a little kind of, you know.
Harsh.
Well, it was just a little pedantic. Although I did notice there was one misuse in it. Shall I say what it is? So he exempts me from the, you know, apparently I pronounce the way it should be done. But he goes, with the noble exception of Fionn. And it was like, it's actually notable, not noble.
That's going to hurt him.
I'm just saying, it's like, if you're going to attack us for on grammatical pedantry and pronunciation and syntax, you know, at least.
Because earlier on, he definitely had a fair go at me over grammar. But I noted Nathan earlier on. I was like, oh, email alert coming Nathan's way. Because you were talking about the Open last year and waiting for Darren Clark. And you said, we were stood in the media.
Which,
we were standing, which he doesn't like.
Which is a real, but that's oddly enough.
Who is this person?
He's just, and do you know what?
Name and shame.
Fionn now is, because he complimented me.
No.
All correspondence. We appreciate it. We take criticism. It's perfectly fine.
Oh, listen, are you joking me? I'll read out some of the Twitter comments about my anti-Trump stance. But it's the we were sat, which is a really Manchester kind of Northwest England thing to say. And I have found myself saying that. And when I go home to Dublin, and particularly with my friend Paul, and it happened one time where I was, oh, we're sat, and he goes, okay, first of all, what the hell is that? It's like, you're not from there. You're from here. Although, mind you, I just a little kind of aside, the postman, that was the postman delivering a package, which is John Creedence, that place we call home. Oh, no. And he opened the door. And obviously because of COVID, you know, they can't come near you. So he puts the package down, steps, two steps back. I opened the door and he went, "Package for Fiona." And I was like, okay.
Oh, magic.
And you said, "That's me."
Yeah, that's me. Thank you. Can I just, sorry, I know, did obviously with the death of Sean Connery this week, and Sean Connery being an avid golfer, he lived in Malaga for many, many years, was apparently learned golf on the set of Goldfinger. You know, remembering Goldfinger where he plays golf against whatever the... Mm. Anyway, but the golf bug bit him properly, took lessons, and when he met his... to be second wife, she was also a mad golfer. So they moved to Malaga. And one of the reasons why he stayed there, other than the tax exempt, was that he had 25 golf courses and he was a lifelong member of Valderrama. But he was a member also at Bel Air Country Club. And he was the only person who carried, like you would never use a caddy ever or a trolley, always carried a bag, which I thought was quite interesting.
But on that Goldfinger set, yeah, he was against a whatever the guy's name, but Odd Job was the one.
Yeah, with the one with the bowler hat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you don't really want a caddy like Odd Job.
No, you don't. But Jim Nance, there's a video circulated this week of Jim Nance, like 10 years ago or whatever, telling like a very, very long anecdote about his encounter with Sean Connery that really could have been condensed to a solid 90 seconds, but it lasted for 9 minutes. Anyway, but the long and short of it is that they'd played Cypress Point and Jim Nance had made the mistake of calling him Mr. Bond. And Connery had a very ambivalent relationship with his role as Bond. He didn't...
Did he? It followed him a bit too much.
He just felt like, Jesus, you know, I'm more than just James Bond. And after he stopped playing, anyway, and he didn't quite enjoy being called Mr. Bond. And Jim Nance did it on a couple of occasions. And then he played the seventh and Jim Nance tries this weird joke about 007 and it just didn't go well. So the long and short of it is that at the end, as they're having lunch, he says, have you ever been to Southern Spain? And Jim Nance goes, yeah, I was just there like for something. And he goes, well, next time you're over, you should look me up. And Jim Nance is going, oh my God, this is my hero. Like I've, you know, worship this guy, watching him on television, playing this character. And he goes, well, okay, so how can I get in touch with you? And Connery goes, I'm in the phone book. And he goes, Connery, Sean Connery. But like, I've literally told you the entire anecdote. Now add 9 minutes to that story without any. Yeah. Anyway, Connery, Sean Connery. That was it.
Dear, dear. The days of the phone book, huh?
Nathan has had enough. He's just left us.
And did he go because we were going to organize a little happy birthday for Nathan? Because, you know, it's Nathan's birthday today.
Is it really?
Yes, Joe Malloy, your longtime colleague and fellow broadcaster. It's Nathan's birthday.
Right. Not big on birthdays in my world anyway. I don't feel like they were that big a deal in the Malloy house. Some people make a still big deal out of birthdays, you know.
I don't, because I'm on the wrong side of the 50s hill, so I'm definitely not making a big deal of a birthday. But
well, we are done. So I would think we will do Augusta preview certainly by Wednesday, if not even aim to do it on the Tuesday. And we may even drop in, keep an eye out, we may even drop in a little podcast mid-tournament, a little recap or something. So if you're planning your week next week, the play will not be finished at kind of 11 o'clock Irish time at night. It will be 8 o'clock just because of light and everything. So it's going to be slightly different, Augusta, but we'll talk about all that next week. Nathan Murphy in absence, thank you. Fionn Davenport, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Peter Laurie, we'll talk next week.
Cheers, Joe.
This was Golf Weekly with thanks to Now TV. Masters next week. We'll be with you next Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Stream the Masters live on Now TV.